This is Icon Art Radio with me, Bill Teeple, and Alan Cobb and Donna Colby. Last week's radio show, we were talking about my art history class that I now give, talking about how visual intelligence flows and has flown and been, has flown. Has flowed.
Flies too.
And it flew through time and space and expressed itself. And it's interesting that I said the place that I haven't gone with this course is into contemporary art and what's going on today with the arts, because it's very difficult to really see what's going on objectively because we're right in the middle of it. Of course, we spent much of the session talking about all of that, and I find it fascinating. I am putting together a course on this what I'm calling where we are and where we're going, to deal with the dilemma of the contemporary period. At the end of the last show, we were talking about we've gotten to a point that it's hard to know what is art and what isn't art, and the blending of art and life, and the boundaries breaking down between all kinds of traditional forms of art. And so you raised a question just now before the show started, and I want you to ask it.
Yeah, because we ended the last show by saying, you know, the elitism is being dispelled, and so anyone can be an artist. And that's not just true in the visual arts, it's also true in literature. You know, anyone is considered a valid source of a story and writing something down or producing something visual. But that brings the question then, are there standards at all? And if there aren't authority figures, if that's what's disappearing, the authority figures who say this is art and this is not art, and the boundaries are breaking down, does that mean anything goes? Or are there standards of a different sort that we have to look
well,
at and tap into?
Yeah. This is the age in visual art, but although visual art has become mental art, and it really is breaking down at every side. But what we say is it's an age of pluralism. In other words, anything can be art, and anything goes. And that's the era we're in. Now, does that make everything that anybody does art? Let me loop back for a moment into what I'm doing with the art history class. I believe that there are expressions that elicit a response of fineness and a sense of balance of design, and where the experience of beauty is had. Now, the reason that I only take my art history course up to 1950 is we're dealing with objects of design and objects of beauty and that have been judged by those who judge art as being of the finest works of the period. And most people who reflect on the arts of those periods, looking back at it, come to the same conclusion. And it's based on their response in their mind and heart to these works of art and their eye. So we're carrying a tradition of discrimination into this period. We're also opening up the possibilities for anything being art. In my art history classes, I define art as human expression, good or bad. And then the next phase, the next thing that I talk about is fine art. That is art where we find qualities of balance and harmony and all of the principles of good design, of shape and color and form and light and dark and composition, all these elements of good design are satisfied in what I consider a piece of fine art. And then there's something that transcends all of that, where I have the experience of what I call beauty, that is beyond just good parts put together. It's where the sum of the parts, where the whole is something bigger and greater that you're getting off of it than just the sum of the parts. And that experience I'm calling beauty. I have to say that that is, and that's why I call the course the quest for beauty. That is what I'm looking for. That is what my heart and mind is looking for. So when I find myself in an age where anything can be beautiful, and everything is traipsed out, even in the art magazine. If you read the reviews in the art magazines, they never really criticize anymore. Right. They say, in the back of all the art magazines, there's the reviews of what's going on in New York and LA and the major cities, the major galleries, and what's the newest thing going on. They describe the show. And they say, and this has qualities of this, and this has qualities of that, and there's this aspect and that. But they don't. You don't see like really biting criticisms, but you also don't see like any kind of like commitment on the part of the critic in any way whatsoever. Yeah. Yeah. And that's because we are in an era of anything goes. So the critics themselves don't have much stand, any real standards to stand on. They can't say, well, the proportions of the figure are wrong, because even in the 20th century, we've decided the proportions of the figure don't have to be right. They can be distorted.
Well, I think what's happening is we are culturally outgrowing art. Art wasn't an issue until the Renaissance, in a sense. It was just something that happened in society, and people who learned how to do those things were artisans making things just like all the other artisans were making things. Then came a period of time when a certain subset of specific crafts, namely painting and marble sculpture and a few others, were considered to be special skills. And then after the Renaissance, we began to actually abstract those from society and hang them on walls and say, this is not just something on the wall in my living room, this is something on the wall of a gallery and you should bow down to it. And the idea of art has lived out its life, and it's at the point now where I think anyone who has thought about how to define art for more than, say, 10 or 15 minutes has come to the conclusion that you can't, and or that you shouldn't, and or that if you do, you know, there'll be 200,000 people totally disagreeing with your definition and you'll never convince them. So there's no way of having a general election to determine a working definition of art that'll be good for the next generation or two. And essentially, art has become a shorthand term for something a little bit intangible and a little bit out of focus that we actually are referring to. I've often defined art as anything done with deliberate care. That's, you know, got a lot to do with what art is, but at the same time, people are exploring and trying things, and for some reason that kind of activity leads to the production of artifacts that have more of an appeal. So you could look at defining art from the point, or look at what art means, don't define it. Look at what art seems to mean functionally from the point of view of those who have declared the ability to perceive it. So we have people who say, yeah, that's art, and people like us who have a very, very wide definition of art, who are looking at a whole bunch of things and saying, yes, that's art. Yes, that souffle is art. Yes, that garden is art. Yes, the way you've painted your living room is artistic. It's not just covered with paint. And what's happened is this interest in what makes something appealing is itself being abstracted from society. So you could define art as that which is of lasting interest to a significant segment of society, to a noticeable segment of society. It doesn't have to be a majority, but there, it has a following. And it really can be culinary arts. I mean, no one wants to differentiate anymore. I mean, we, in this radio program, incessantly use art to refer to painting. And we don't mean to limit it that way, but in context, it comes out that way almost 100% of the time. And I don't worry about it because I'm not defensive about music being an art. Who could be? Everybody knows music is an art, and acting is an art, and cinematography is an art, and playwriting is an art. And good grief, if you go on and list them all, you've listed every form of human endeavor, provided that the person doing it is doing it in this ineffable way that leads people to define art as what an artist does in his studio, which is a great way of begging the question. So I just think that the notion of abstracting art from life, abstracting art from human endeavor, abstracting art from the tremendous skills that people acquire in specific areas is no longer relevant. It's time to move on and recognize that human expression and human creativity and the human quest for understanding and human spiritual evolution and human devotion, all of those things give rise to stuff that we like, and we like to see it, and we want to see more of it. And often, without realizing it, when we encounter it, if we give it our full attention, we discover those origins that it came from, the quest for spiritual evolution, the quest for self-knowledge, or the quest for peace of mind, or an understanding of how engines work. It doesn't matter.
Well, and you used the word ineffable, and you before were talking about that something, you know, special something that you can't really define. And I think that's kind of the core thing here, is some different level of perception than the one that is based on standards that we've learned. You know, this is good because of this and this and this and a good composition and blah, blah, blah. But there's some intuitive perception that we have where we look at something or we taste something or we hear something and it just moves us. We just have this inner experience of expansion and broadening of perception or breaking our boundaries or whatever. And to try to define those kinds of experiences in words and, you know, structures and everything, it's ridiculous. But we all know what it is when we have those experiences. It can be as simple as the light coming in a window and shining in a certain way on a glass of liquid on a table or something can suddenly give us that ineffable experience of beauty, a fine meal shared with friends or something like that. All of those things have that quality that we know to be art on that deep level. And so I think that that's the beauty of what's happening today. Is it's a little garbled right now because people are still trying to define it and trying to figure out what's happening instead of just like being patient and letting it sort itself out, which it will.
Is there really any benefit, any value at all in distinguishing between that ray of sunlight shining through a glass of orange juice on the table and a Rembrandt painting? Is it important to make that distinction? Or isn't it perhaps relevant to just say that I'm experiencing a taste of joy from a sensory input, you know, from perceiving something, and that which I am perceiving, if it brings out this wave of appreciation, I'm inclined to call it art. And yet, if it's just sunlight shining through a glass of orange juice, I can't call it art because there's no artist. But there is an artist if you want to look a little farther, and so you can express the joy, the gratitude to that artist. Who cares who the artist is, but, if it's art.
I'm beginning to be hungry to get rid of the word art.
Yeah.
And just have us talk about all this without that word. Because that word, yeah. It's like the word God and using those kinds of words. It just, people immediately, you know, have their camp that they're associated with, that they're going to stick with. And then we can't talk about the reality. So if we can remove those things and talk about the reality, then we can agree on stuff and we can start to experience what it's really all about.
Art without categorization.
In this case, that experience, see, when I call my course The Quest for Beauty, and what we're talking about right now, this point we're getting at, is that there's an experience that validates it all. There are, if you taste something that tastes good to you, you go yum yum, mm-hmm. and there's no like posturing to say yum yum. There's no like building an intellectual construct.
Yeah, unless around... it's fine wine.
right.
Well, that's where we get into the problem.
Yeah, exactly.
But I when you were talking, it brought up an interesting issue, and that's that when observing the ray of light coming through the orange juice, and when observing the Rembrandt, there is something that's causing the experience. And that is a receptivity for the experience on the side of the viewer.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
If the viewer is sick, if the viewer has preconceived notions as to what is art and what isn't art, they won't have either experience. They will have their reward, which is their crustiness, their discrimination, or what. But they won't have what we're trying to define as art here, or we remove the word art and we get to the experience of what it's all about and why we want to be here in the first place.
So art is the elimination of crustiness in the observer.
That's
in a way it is. The more refined your perception is, the more art you see, until the point where the word art is totally ridiculous, because you're seeing it in every bit of tree bark. Look at those Weidel paintings of tree bark.
Right.
How interesting can tree bark get? Anyway, it's fantastic, and it's just because of seeing it differently. And if your definitions are all set up and tree bark isn't allowed to be anything other than a naturalistic texture that supports the notion of volumetric trunk shapes in a scene of some kind that you're doing according to a prescribed system of representational painting, then fine. The bark is very difficult to reproduce, but it isn't necessarily saying anything besides just being a necessary challenge to your technique. But then you look at tree bark and you see something like that, and you know it's turning into a whole another world, and you don't even know what to make of it.
So go ahead.
So I just thought of two different things here. So the artist who brings that quality out is a visionary more than a technician. Has some technical skills to put it down, but there can be artists who are revered and have been revered for merely being technicians because they can do something that I can't do, you know, and their works themselves can be completely lifeless.
So this is that area of virtuosity.
Or their choice of material can be so stunningly intriguing that the technician aspect of it just becomes part of the ability to present it, the Dali painting of Christ on the floating cubes. Mm-hmm. That's a masterpiece of technique, but it's also an astonishing image that you sort of never forget once you've seen it.
So
sometimes the two go together and sometimes they don't. Right. Picasso and some of those artists said they moved us deeply with richness and depth and psychological power with very simple, crude gestures. So the what we've been calling an artist is really someone who reveals this. Yeah. But if we want to remove the name artist or art, then, you know, if we want to call that person something, I don't know if we need to call that person something except the guy that moved me. Mm-hmm. This guy's moved, you know, yeah, this is revealed. This guy, you know, and it can be...
Well, it would and be yet nice that's... if we had a vocabulary for talking about those qualities, and that's mm-hmm. part of the problem. It's like when I'm trying to write about timbre. I looked up timbre on Wikipedia, and there's this fairly brief description of timbre and a discussion of what the word means in different branches of sound study and music and things. And apparently in psychoacoustics, it's considered to be a garbage can term, because it just refers to everything that isn't melody and harmony and, you know, recognizable
rhythm,
sonic signatures and things. But the reason that it's a garbage can term is because we don't have any terms for describing timbre. We need to borrow terms from the other senses, and they fit reasonably well in some cases. A sound can be harsh and sharp and buzzy and fuzzy, and you know, you end up using terms from all different ranges of experience to talk about timbre. And it's the same old story of the Eskimos with possibly, you know, 45 words for snow, because they deal with it intimately in a lot of different contexts. And we basically have snow, slush, yellow snow, and that's about it. Maybe ice if you throw that in. Because we just don't deal with snow on any level of subtle perception. So with art or artist, it's been a garbage can term, and it's time to grow out of that and come up with specific terms for the qualities that are worth noting. Like, this is a person who goes deep, and their work shows you depth. Whether it's great art or not has nothing to do with it. If you look at it closely, it'll take you someplace. This other person is a master craftsman. They do things with impeccable skill and refinement. And when you look at it, the depth that you see isn't in the subject matter. It's in the fact that they have somehow managed to use the human machine to generate things that you never would have thought possible. And that applies to someone who's an aerial acrobat in a similar way. And we don't need to not call them an artist. We're watching them do that they've devoted their lives to blows our minds. And that's what we like about it. There are other things that are on the other end of the spectrum. They're so subtle that you barely experience them. But if you take the time and shut up and sit in a quiet place and discover them that way, and in many cases, for example, reading a book or reading a poem, or rereading a poem and reading it for the first time in the process, that tiny little intimate personal experience doesn't reflect some kind of master craftsmanship on the part of the creator of the work. It simply reflects the fact that you can see the infinite creativity embodied in actually everything. And the only reason you don't see that infinite creativity in a cigarette butt in the gutter is because you haven't learned to see deeply enough yet. Eventually you can see it there. There's no place where you can't see it. But so the term art is in a sense a symptom of the incompleteness of our ability to see things, and to see things as they are, because every human act, every expression of humanity contains some kind of amazing magic, which, if you have the skill to see it, will blow your mind for sure. I rest my case.
Yay.
Hear, hear.
And what you've just described is available at every moment, at every point in time and space. And this circles back to what we were talking about last week, where we feel like I'm experiencing this now, therefore I'm missing out on, you know, everything else I could be experiencing, which often is a value judgment, like what I'm doing now is more boring than what I could maybe be doing if I were in Paris or something like that. But in reality, that's just, that kind of value judgment is just my lack of creativity and ability to see that level of life right here,
yeah,
where I am in this moment.
But we want to note that it is self-serving to some to maintain the separation.
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, the exclusivity factor has real market value.
Because if you have to give up your specialness as artist to just have whatever you do be what it is and be judged on its actual value to society and to your, and to those around you, and you're maintaining the separation as artist and you're actually a marketable object and person because of that, you're going to feel, you don't want to lose that status. So this is something of the period, the place we're at.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, as the vocabulary emerges, the exclusivity will start to disappear because we'll realize that this person is valued for these qualities of depth or these qualities of precision or skill or whatever. And we can just enjoy the admiration for those skills or those depths or those insights or those that humor or whatever it is without having to rely on the garbage can term. And I think now maybe as a form of retribution to the people who considered timbre to be a garbage can term for all of those spectacular spectra of sonic wonder that I would consider to be the purview of timbre, maybe we should in fact begin to consider that the word art is a garbage can term. We've already concluded beyond any reasonable doubt that it can't be defined. And what good is it if it can't be defined? It's all we're doing is groping towards some notion or some set of notions, and we'd be a lot better off losing the term and coming up with words that describe those particular notions.
Well, and even artists like Alexander Calder dispelled the term, you know.
He had the courage to say, to go against it.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.